Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, called The Characteristics of King Puranjana, text number 19. Nanaranya mriga vratair
Nanaranya mriga vratair
Anabadhe muni vratai
Anabadhe muni vratai
Ahutam manyate pantho
Ahutam manyate pantho
Yatra kokila kujitai
Yatra kokila kujitai
Nana
Nana
Various
Aranya,
Aranya,
forest,
Mriga,
Mriga,
animals,
Vratai,
with groups,
Anabadhe,
in the matter of non-violence,
Munivratai,
like the great sages,
Ahutam,
as if invited,
Manyate,
thinks.
Pantha,
passenger.
Yatra,
where?
Kokila,
of cuckoos.
Kujitai,
by the cooing. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In such an atmosphere, even the animals of the forest became non-violent and non-envious, like great sages. Consequently, the animals did not attack anyone. Over and above everything was the cooing of the cuckoos. Any passenger passing along that path was invited by that atmosphere to take rest in that nice garden. Please repeat. In such an atmosphere,
even the animals of the forest
became non-violent and non-envious,
like great sages.
Consequently, the animals did not attack anyone.
Over and above everything
was the cooing of the cuckoos.
Any passenger passing along that path
was invited by that atmosphere
to take rest in that nice garden.
Purport. A peaceful family with wife and children is compared to the peaceful atmosphere of the forest. Children are sometimes compared to non-violent animals. Sometimes, however, wives and children are called svajanakhya dasyu, burglars in the name of kinsmen. A man earns his livelihood with hard labor, but the result is that he is plundered by his wife and children exactly as a person in a forest is attacked by some thieves and burglars who take his money. Nonetheless, in family life, the turmoil of wife and children appears to be like the cooing of the cuckoos in the garden of family life. Being invited by such an atmosphere, the person who is passing through such a blissful family life desires to have his family with him at all costs. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, one of the favorite topics of Srimad Bhagavatam is criticizing family life. Over and over again, everywhere you look, the Bhagavatam is sages, great demigods, everyone is kind of lamenting the fate of those who are entangled in family life on this earth. You have it in the third canto, when the four Kumaras go to see Lord Vishnu, there's a beautiful description by Brahma to the demigods of what Vaikuntha looks like. And he's describing everything about Vaikuntha, how it's so, beautiful forests, and everything's encrusted with jewels, and all kinds of plants and animals and so forth. And right in the middle of it, he just pauses for a minute and says, "Oh, alas, ha hanta, is how terrible it is that those who are entangled in family life in this world, they don't know how to enjoy these topics of Vaikuntha and the Lord who presides there." And like this, and he spends about two, three verses criticizing the family affairs of this world, and then goes along, continues with his description. And it just seems that so often this happens in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes it's demigods who are lamenting. Brahma, there, he says the same thing. He says, even we want to take birth in your position, I mean, in the human being's position. And yet, you take birth here with a human body in a position which is very favorable for achieving liberation, and yet you spend all your time engaged in day-to-day troubles of worldly affairs. And he says, how unfortunate that type of thing is. But perhaps one of the heaviest incriminations of family life is in the third canto in chapter 30, which I believe is Kapiladev speaking. And he gives an extended analogy there of how family members are like vicious animals in a forest, or burglars on the path through the forest. This example, this point that Prabhupada is making in the purport, svajanakhya dasyu, that these are actually dasyu, burglars, svajanakhya, under the name of relatives. Right? So what we call relatives are actually burglars. And there's a whole description there, very intense, of how it says, just like clouds don't know that they're being carried by the wind, and they just think they're there in the sky floating, they don't realize how fast they're being pushed. In the same way, a man in family life doesn't know how his life is being torn away from him. He's being pushed in one direction or another. And he's completely enchanted by the sweet words of his wife, and then the very sweet words of the children. And these are like, I forget the example given, but it's some kind of a hunter's trap, which is very enticing, and yet is meant to kill. And then they're actually, and they offer him some kind of superficial respect as long as he can earn and support the family. And when he stops earning, then no one respects such an old man. And instead, they all become very vicious and ready to take him. And like this, and Prabhupada, of course, is also unrelenting in the purports. Instead of softening it, he just magnifies it and says how this is, yes, and it's like this, and it's like this, and you have to do like this, and it's all kinds. And he talks about how family life is all about politics and diplomacy, and unless you're a good politician, you cannot be a good family man, because you have to keep all the relatives very happy. And so like this, it becomes very intense, the description of family life. Sometimes compared to a prison, whose shackles are the various attractions of the family. Sometimes compared to a well from which a person cannot get out, and sometimes to a dangerous forest where everyone is ready to attack you or rob you. So that's, we find, and here Prabhupada is continuing that same vein. The example in the verse is actually quite nice. It's describing how it's a very beautiful forest and everyone's quite peaceful and comfortable. And yet in the purport, Prabhupada says, yeah, that's true sometimes. But also, there are burglars and thieves in this forest, and they like to rob the people who are there. Yeah. So what do we make of this? Since given the fact that most of us are involved in family in some way or another, to some degree or another, and we value generally those relationships quite a bit. They mean a lot to us. In the material world, perhaps the greatest happiness one can find, the main source of happiness really in this world, is the relationships we enjoy. And especially relationships that involve family or very close friends. In Sanskrit they're called swajana, your own people, right, or suhrit, those who are your well-wishers. Those relationships are the main source of happiness in this world. And yet, they're also the main source of suffering in this world at the same time. Most of the problems, most of the most intense problems we know of, come from relationships, come from family relationships. And most of the greatest forms of happiness that we can think of, the nicest points in our life, generally tend to be because of relationships, and again, especially family relationships. So it's kind of this, I don't know what the word is, kind of this delicate situation that we find ourselves in, where something is too sweet to resist and yet too hot to actually eat. This is the definition of a good chutney. Too sweet to eat and too hot to resist. Right. And too sweet and too hot to eat. Right. So that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in family. And the scriptures are constantly trying to remind us of the troubles or the dangers involved in these relationships, in order to help us train our vision to something beyond, right? To help us use these relationships, to live in these relationships in such a way that they help us progress towards a higher goal, a way in which we can see not just we become completely absorbed in our current situation, but can see beyond it, can see farther than that. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he describes the topic of renunciation. And there's two things he describes there. Sannyasa and Tyaga. Arjuna asks Krishna, what does sannyasa mean and what does Tyaga mean? Sannyasa, renunciation, but especially we know what kind of renunciation. Then Tyaga means also renunciation. They're both kind of variations on renunciation. And what are these two, Arjuna? So Krishna, he defines both of them. And there he gives a very nice hint as to how we might approach this delicate situation that Prabhupada is describing here in terms of family relationships, family life, and how this mood of renunciation can go with it. He says, kamyanam karmana nyasam, sannyasa. Sannyasa, he says, is the giving up, nyasa, of kamyanam karma, of activities which are ordinarily desirable by anyone, things that one wants to do. So, associating with the opposite sex is something that's generally very attractive to most people. Having the association of children and the happiness that they bring, having the comforts of home, the warmth of home, the friendship of society. Right? These are things that are all kamya. They're very desirable. So kamyanam karma, these desirable activities, nyasa, giving them up, sannyasa. That's what sannyasa is, Krishna says. But tyaga, another form of renunciation, he describes as giving up the fruits of one's activities. In other words, not necessarily giving up the activities themselves, but you engage in the activities because you want to. You find yourself well situated in that position, you like to. So you engage in those activities, but then you give up the fruits of them. What the result that comes from, you accept those as coming from Krishna and try to maintain a mood of detachment in that situation. So in other words, the sannyasi will say, associating with the opposite sex is something desirable, therefore I'll give it up. The grihastha says, I have a desire to associate with the opposite sex, so I will accept that association through marriage, but then the situation that arises as a result, whatever comes from it, whether it's happiness, or it's relationship, or it's wealth, or it's children, it's house, all those things I'm giving up to the Lord. I'll try to use them in a way that engages in the Lord's service. Both types of renunciation produce a very wonderful result and can transform an ordinarily dangerous situation in the material world into one that's actually quite wonderful, into this situation of a peaceful forest rather than a dangerous one. Because both examples are given here, right? That forest can be very peaceful, very happy. It can also be very dangerous and very problematic. So the key, Krishna is saying, is this idea of tyaga, or renunciation. maintaining a vision, maintaining a purpose in life that goes beyond the immediate situation, not becoming so absorbed in our activities that this is all we see, and keeping our vision fixed on the Lord. That type of tyaga produces the same result, actually, as sannyasa, which is the other type of renunciation. Both produce very... And each one has its own austerity involved. Each one has its own austerity, and each one has its own forms of happiness, its own kinds of pleasure. So, for example, a sannyasi will say, I give up the association of family, and therefore most people desire children, and I will not strive for that. And so a sannyasi is a civil dead man, Prabhupada says. In terms of society, he's already dead. And as Vaishnava sannyasis, we don't do this, but in many forms of sannyasa, the Dashanami sannyasis, for example, in the Shankaracharya Sampradaya, they will perform their own funeral ceremony before they take sannyasa. They'll go to a cremation ground, and they'll do all the mantras, and they'll light the fire, and they'll perform their own funeral. Why? Because there will be no one to perform their funeral. They're telling society that I'm now dead. I'm only alive in terms of my spiritual life, in terms of social relationships. I'm dead, and therefore a sannyasi then is free of those responsibilities. Right? So that's on one hand, giving up kamyanam karmana nyasam, giving up those things that are desirable. A grihastha says, I want these relationships, I have these desires, so I want to have children. That's something I would like to enjoy, that happiness. And so he or she accepts that that kamya karma, that desirable activity. But then the fruits that come from it, namely children, they involve austerity also. Right? So in other words, that austerity, for example, I know one devotee family, a wonderful couple, and they have several children, and one of those children has a developmental disorder, right? Quite severe. And so the child practically has to be taken care of continuously by their parents. The parents are growing older, as is the child, and still they take care of that child like a little baby. And perhaps the parents had hopes that one day this child would take care of me, that one day he would grow up and we would have a relationship of friends or whatever. So many hopes can be invested in a parent-child relationship. And yet, many of their hopes or dreams for that child won't come true because of the nature of the child that they received. And yet, they go through that austerity, an austerity which is very real on a day-to-day basis. So much work they do to take care of this child in a very loving manner. Right? They accept that austerity very happily, with a sense of duty, with a sense of responsibility. And they've decided that this is the tyaga, this is the renunciation that Krishna has given them in their life. And they go forward with that in a very Krishna-conscious way. So my point is that both involve tyaga or renunciation, both involve tapa or austerity. There's no situation in this material world we can find, no ashrama we can find, where that won't be involved, that won't be an element, where everything will be fine and dandy and everything will be smooth and we won't really have to work hard. We think that way, right? Prabhupada says we think that by adjusting our situation in the material world, somehow everything will be okay. I once heard, I forget who was giving a class, but they said that family life, marriage rather, is like a cage, right? like a bird in a cage. The birds on the inside want to get out, and those who are outside, they want to get in, right? And this is the situation. We think, if I just get myself settled properly in family life, life will be easy, right? My wife will take care of me, and my kids will be happy, and everything will be nice, and, you know, so much comfort and this and that. We have this hope. I just adjust my material situation, life will be happy. And then, once we're in that situation, we think, uh-oh, this isn't turning out exactly the way I thought. This is not, you know, an easy ride all the way through. I have to actually work very hard. And so then we develop some sense of renunciation, usually a very false sense of renunciation, or temporary sense of renunciation, right? That this is so much trouble, this is terrible, maybe I should just take sannyas. Right? But of course, if we were to run away and take sannyas, then there would be other forms of tapas, austerity involved, that go with it. Because every situation in this material world, this is the setup of the material world, it's the nature of this world, that it's made in such a way that austerity will always be a factor in this world. This is why exactly Brahma and the other demigods consider our birth to be so fortunate. Because we cannot engage in family life and have a smooth ride all the way through without putting work into it. Right? We cannot be a sannyasi and have a smooth ride all the way through without putting work into it. That aspect of tapasya is what makes our birth so attractive to the demigods, because we're constantly forced in a way, pushed to perform austerity, and in this way to purify our existence and work our way back to Godhead. Right? Famous statement by Rishabh, Tapo divyam putraka yena sattva, shuddhyet yasmat brahma sokhyam tvanantam. By doing this, shuddhyet, we become purified, brahma sokhyam tvanantam, and we can actually taste unlimited transcendental happiness. Right? So that's the whole idea, right? That if we can live in this forest of family life that's being described here, with this sense of renunciation, with this sense of tyaga, and what does this renunciation mean? Again, we have to understand it the proper way. The sense of renunciation in family life is not sannyasa, that definition. It's tyaga. It's not that, oh, now I'm not going to do anything because it's too much trouble. This is, Krishna says, renunciation the mode of ignorance. This is too much trouble, so I'll give it. It's too much trouble taking care of my family. Well, I won't work. Right? Or it's too much trouble taking care of my child, so forget it. No, this is not the right type of renunciation for family life. Right? The proper renunciation is the sense of tyaga that Krishna defines as, I'm in this situation, so therefore, whatever comes to me as a result, I will take this as my allotted share of tapasya in life. And I'll accept it quite happily or quite cheerfully. And so I'm in the forest, and there are moments which are very nice. The cuckoos are cooing, and the deer are there, and the children are there, and everything's so sweet and so on. There are times like this in family life. And those are the moments for which we enter family life to begin with. Those are things that soften the experience in the forest of this material world. But then we should also expect, we should not be surprised if there are moments of fear and danger and difficulty, when the lions come out, when, you know, things that become a little burglars and so forth, things become a little dangerous on the forest path. And we understand that this is part of the whole deal, right? This is, if we didn't get it this way, we'd get it some other way. This is where we have to have it. This is actually Krishna's mercy in the way that he gives it to us. So this verse is a really nice example of that dual nature of the material world, and how both types of experiences can be there. And yet, by cultivating this sense of renunciation properly understood, we can actually make the entire experience a very, very good learning experience that can then lead us to better and higher and greater things, more permanent things beyond this world. So I want to leave a little time for question and answers or discussion. I'll pause there and see if anyone has any questions or comments or discussion. Shishiradha Gopinath Ki. Any questions? Any thoughts? Ideas? Yes.
In the first it says that the family is like someone makes some money, and the family is like plunderers who come and take the money away.
Yeah.
So if someone's in the position of a breadwinner, then as a devotee, how do you avoid? Because my mental reaction to that is then, well, I'm going to keep it for myself.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to get it, so I'm going to keep it.
That's a nice question. In fact, it reminds me of a couple points. There's one lecture in which Prabhupada is talking about this idea of the family is plunderers. Yeah. And he says how, it's very funny, he's laughing, all the devotees are laughing. He says how the family, normally if a person gets burgled, thieved, stolen, what's the word? burgled, that's a word, right? Burgled. if a person gets robbed, right, then normally you're very upset, you're very disturbed, you're very distressed. You think, this is horrible, and oh my God, this, and you go file a report with the police. He says, but if, he says, if your wife takes all your money, right, and says, honey, can I have this? Honey, can I have that? Please, can I use this? And she uses the credit card and charges things on it. Then he says, then a man is very happy. Yeah, she loves me very much. Right? She's taking all my money. So he says, this is the nature of Maya. Right? That a person, someone else takes it, you think, oh, horrible, this is terrible. But your own wife burgles you at home, no problem, right? Very, this is a sign of love. She must love me very much. Otherwise, why would she ask me for money like that? And it's for a householder, for a man, it's a great sense of pride. Yeah, I'm, you know, she's asking me, I'm supporting my family, I'm giving to her, and so on. And he laughs and so forth. Very fun. But anyway, seriously speaking here, it's true that there are situations, right? The material world is basically a place where everyone's trying to take advantage of another person. Right? Prabhupada describes this as kind of one of the definitions of what the material world is. A place where everyone is trying to take advantage of someone else. Everyone's trying to get someplace by stepping on someone else's head. This is the way the world is built up. It's a zero-sum game. If you have something, it means someone else lacks something. And so in order to get something, well, you need to take it away from someone else. Some people do this very nicely, very smoothly. Other people do it in a very brash and, you know, kind of forthright way. They're known as thieves. But everyone is, the material world, this is kind of how everything works. And so, on the one hand, the scriptures are trying to say, look, wake up to this fact. Wake up to this fact that everyone in this world is trying to take advantage of you. Even those who are very close to you, they are also using or manipulating you. And this is so often the complaint that people have about marriage. Right? This is so often the feeling that people get. This is so often one of the reasons that leads to a divorce or to a breakup in a marriage. He's using me, or she was using me. Right? They're manipulating me. The Bhagavatam is saying, yeah, this is the case. This is the situation. Right? These family members are like thieves, and they're waiting to burgle you. And when you don't have anything to give them, then they don't care for you. This was Vidura's message to Dhritarashtra. Right? When Dhritarashtra got old, he said, your teeth are falling out, you can't see anything, you can't hear anything, and you're just sitting here, rotting, eating scraps of food from who? Bhima. Bhima is feeding you the food left over. Of course, he wasn't actually doing this, but he's describing it in those words to make the point. Why? And he's killed all 100 of your sons, and you still put up with it. This is the level of your attachment. Wake up. Can't you see the situation? And so Prabhupada says in one place, he says, at the age of 50, a man must become detached, leave home, and travel widely, preaching Krishna consciousness. That otherwise, this is a fate that everyone will suffer. So that's one side of the picture. Right? The scriptures are kind of ringing the bell to wake us up and say, look around you. Right? If you don't realize it now, you won't be able to cultivate detachment. And then you'll have to suffer this fate. And it'll be too late to get detached, because you won't have what it takes to cultivate that renunciation, to become detached, to leave, to stand up for your spiritual life. So on the one hand, they're trying to ring that bell for us. A great favor, actually. But on the other hand, they're also teaching us how, while we're in that situation, we can make it a very Krishna-conscious one. And transform that image of the family robbing us into the idea of us serving Krishna's devotees. And this is how Krishna consciousness can transform this picture in a very wonderful way. Right? That normally, yes, it is true. This world is a place where everyone takes advantage of another. But for a Krishna conscious person, a Krishna conscious person says, well, yes, that's my role. My role is as servant, right? And a servant is someone who gives to others. So this is what I'm doing. My family are devotees of the Lord, and Krishna has asked me to serve them, to offer service to them. And so, therefore, I give freely to who they are, to them. I'm giving generously, and I'm giving very freely to them. And then that becomes an act of service. It becomes actually something very wonderful. And a person feels, actually, I have to get detached anyway in course of time. I anyway have to cultivate a sense of detachment. Where am I going to take my money? I have to leave it to my kids anyway. Right? I have to leave it to my wife anyway. So why don't I give generously? Right? And so that sense of possessiveness that naturally becomes part of the picture when you feel that you're being burgled, right? It becomes very... someone was telling me... this was their own experience of how a thief came into their home. I can't remember who it was now. And they realized... Actually, I think I read it somewhere in the news. And they realized they were being robbed. And so, I don't know what came to them, but instead of running away, they turned the light on and told the thief, oh, welcome, what would you like? And the thief was just like, oh yeah, I read this in a news story, I remember. The thief was just like, completely dazed, you know. What did you ask me? what would you like? And then this lady, she started speaking to this man who had, broken his way into her home. And he was a young man, maybe in his 20s or something. And she said, why are you doing this? Do you realize how you're destroying your future? I mean, even if you don't get caught with me, but you will get caught, do you know that? And he said, yeah. He said, do you know once you get caught, it's practically the end of your possibilities? It's going to be... I mean, she started talking about... And this man, he broke down. He broke down and started crying. And said, you're right, what am I doing? And then he started describing his own situation. How he had a family on his own, he had been trying to get... This is recently during this recession and the economic crisis. He had been trying to get jobs for 6 months. His family was desperate. He was so ashamed... that he didn't have any money, he couldn't show his face to his family, and so in that sense of desperation, he decided to rob. And this was his first time. And then actually it turned into kind of a spiritual experience where she started talking to him about Jesus. And the man had a transformative experience and he accepted Jesus into his life. Wonderful. And the whole situation became transformed, you know, into one just by her little act. What was her mood? Just by the little question she asked. How can I serve you? Right? What do you want? Please take. Right? And so this mood of service has the power to transform any kind of situation. Even a situation in which we're being taken advantage of, which the Bhagavatam says is the situation of family life in this world. But when we develop the mood of service, no, actually, these are not thieves. These are devotees of the Lord. And let me see what I can do to serve them. Anyway, nothing is mine. I have to give up everything eventually, anyhow. So why should I be so attached? Right? Let me give in a way, of course, that's beneficial to them. Not like, you know, we don't spoil the kids or so forth. But no, we give in a way that's beneficial. Then what's wrong? What's wrong with that? And suddenly our whole mood of, oh my God, I'm being robbed, and this is it, which is bound to come up at some point, that feeling, right? It becomes one of open-handedness and let me give. Does that make sense? And so it's kind of this mood of service, which is the transformative factor there in Krishna-conscious family life, is ideally every member of the family is thinking, let me serve the others. And this is, of course, hopefully then extends to the rest of our life also. This is the mood we try to cultivate amongst devotees in general, not just even in our family. But how can I serve? And that becomes a recipe for a very nice relationship between a husband and wife and between parents and child. So, anything else? Any other questions? Yes?
So if there is a rule, then why is it still advised to take some yes?
If there's that mood of service is not there?
If the mood is there, then why take some yes? Why finish that last 15 years if the mood is there of service?
Okay, that's a good question. A couple things. One is that there's different things described in different places. On the one hand, it says that sannyas is actually not required in Kali Yuga. It's something that is actually not recommended. Prabhupada explains that this is referring more to impersonalist or Mayavad sannyasa. We have examples, anyhow, of devotees who have not taken sannyasa, and to the very end, and very, very advanced devotees, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for example. And yet still, in all of those cases, you find that they developed a very, very deep sense of renunciation later on in their family life. So the fundamental point that Prabhupada never, ever sways from is the basic idea that we must develop a sense of detachment as we grow older. And how exactly that detachment is manifested, we have different examples depending on different situations. For some people, it may very well not be possible to take sannyas for whatever reason. And we have nice examples of devotees who never took sannyas and yet are clearly very, very advanced and pure devotees. But yet they also developed a sense of renunciation at the very end. And we have other fine examples of devotees who actually took that order, that ashram of sannyas, and left home. So whether or not that happens, the basic point Prabhupada says over and over again is that we have to develop that sense of renunciation. And he asks us to pursue our family life with that vision in mind, with that goal in mind. That it doesn't happen one fine morning that we wake up and realize, oh, I'm 50, now I've got to renounce. It doesn't happen like that. We have to kind of go in. We have to have an entrance plan with an exit plan. Right? Both have to be going together. It's like, both strategies have to be there. When you put yourself in a situation, you also have to have a strategy to get out. Without developing that, then things become very terrible. They become very unpalatable. Even if everyone's a devotee, if that sense of renunciation is not there near the end, I've seen this myself many, many times, things can become very unpalatable. Because it's not appropriate. For people who are, when the children are grown up, right, and it's their world and it's their life, and if we maintain the same level of
investment
in the situation, right, this hands-on thing, then it becomes very unpalatable, very unfriendly situation. I've seen this in the case of my own parents, how nicely it can work if that sense of detachment happens. Like my father, for example, right now he's traveling in South America for about a month, giving lectures and classes there and so forth, and using his experience in the corporate world to give programs in being Krishna conscious in a business setting, which is very useful to a lot of grihasthas. And my mother's at home with my wife and our family and so forth, and you can see that both are so happy. Like, my father's just blissful. He's doing something, he's out, so forth. My mother's so happy. She also travels a lot and does her homeschooling seminars and guides younger couples in terms of raising children and so forth. And it gives them so much happiness, whereas the day-to-day activities of the family don't anymore. Right? It's like they've been there, they've done that, and they've been doing it for years and years, for decades now. Now it's our time to do it. Right? And we have to kind of take up that responsibility and so forth. So it This is kind of, it's natural. This is why it's described in the scriptures. It's not because the scriptures are trying to force us into some kind of a, you know, thing we don't want to make us suffer near the end of our life. No, this is actually very natural. This is the way that we can actually be happy. And to stay hands-on, invested, attached, right, till the very end, that's what's very unnatural. My spiritual master, Hanumat Prasad Goswami, he always says, it's not natural for a husband and wife for to be so attached to the very end. It's not natural for a wife to wake up and find her husband's cold body in bed one morning. Right? This is not what a wife thinks of, what she hopes for, that this is going to happen. Women generally outlive men, but this is not how a man is supposed to leave this world. No, this is actually very unpalatable and very unnatural. Much more natural is that both develop a sense of renunciation in their own way and leave like that, leave this world as with a sense of dignity, with a sense of respect. And that sense of dignity, no matter how wonderful and Krishna conscious your family is, that sense of dignity cannot be maintained if we insist on staying as involved and attached till the last day of our lives. It cannot be maintained. We lose that sense of dignity and self-respect. So it's something that's actually very natural and very important. And whether we do it through sannyasa or we do it through a sense of vanaprastha, right, it has to be there. Grihastha life has to be a lead to something further, like vanaprastha or sannyasa. I saw a hand here.
And it makes a wonderful point that this mode of service is actually it's liberating us. Mm. So I was wondering how does that translate in a family that's not like all devotees, for instance, where you have a situation where you are maybe a devotee but other members are not. So
yes. That's a very good question. I know one family very closely. They live in Boise, Idaho, actually. They became devotees there. They had most of their children there. The children are growing up as devotees. The wife is a devotee. The husband is not. He doesn't stop her from being a devotee. Yet at the same time, he has his limits, and it's been a long struggle for her over the years. Kind of gradually extracting concessions from her husband in terms of her Krishna consciousness. From once a week going to a temple, she's now Brahman initiated, doing deity worship on a daily basis. And really, it's been her kind of struggle in her Krishna consciousness. And yet, as a result of that, she's grown and her whole family's grown into wonderful devotees. Her children are real gems, really wonderful. So innocent and direct in their Krishna consciousness. And the eldest son, she has two daughters and two boys, and the eldest is a boy, and he's like a second father to the family, and he looks after them materially, he looks after them spiritually, so it's it can be a struggle, but that struggle can actually become very fruitful. And I think the point that she's realized, or she's expressed to me several times, is she's understood that everyone has their struggle in some part of their life. Right? Everyone has an allotted, again, like we're saying, this allotted portion of tapasya. And we're going to have to experience it in some place, right? in some way. For some people, it's because their husband is not Krishna conscious. For some, it's their wife is not Krishna conscious, so it's a struggle. For some, it's the children that perhaps don't turn out as they had hoped for. For some, it's in-laws who make it miserable. We each have some place in life where Krishna wants us to struggle, to show what we're actually made of, right? To show him what our spiritual life is, what's the substance actually there. Can you be Krishna conscious even when your husband is not? Can you be Krishna conscious even when your in-laws make life difficult for you? Can you be? And so that's what I think she's come to realize over the years. is that this is her God-given portion of tapasya. This is her, and she still maintains hope that he'll become a devotee one day. Right? She still does that. But even if he doesn't, then it's okay. I'm going to go on and I'm going to cook prasadam for the entire family and I'm going to do whatever devotional service I can and I'm going to raise my children to the best of my ability given these particular circumstances. I don't think I've met anyone whose material situation is perfect, who's got it all. Right? Sometimes it looks like that on the outside. Wow, that person's life is perfect. But it's not. It's not. Because otherwise they wouldn't be here in the two. It's not. Okay, we are over time. Sorry I couldn't get to all the questions, but thank you all very much for your attention. Hare Krishna.